Welcome in, everyone, to Locked On Knicks. Alex Wolf here, going lone wolf today. No Gavin, no guests, just me serenading you about the Knicks 106-103 win over the Dallas Mavericks on Thursday night. I'm a little late with this one. I apologize. I needed a day to get my thoughts back together. We had our fantastic meetup, which I will, of course, mention during the show because it was fantastic. And the game itself was fantastic. So I'm going to get into all that and more in just a minute on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Knicks is all rebound, back up, off the glass, it's good! RJ Barrett brings the Knicks to the
win. What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane, Knox foul from behind, count it and one, as Fisdale pumps his fist.
Becomes infectious.
All right, welcome into Locked On Knicks. This is Alex Wolf here, going lone wolf, like I said today, so having a good time in that way. That's a lie. I enjoy having someone else here, but you know, every once in a while, got to do it by yourself. And the Knicks, they beat Dallas again, second time, 106-103, an absolutely cold-blooded Marcus Morris three to end the game. Fantastic stretch run that I had to watch again just to appreciate. The whole game honestly was great, and the Knicks played as well as you could ever really expect the Knicks to play this year based off how they've been previously. But I just want to first, before we get into everything else, we of course did a meetup, which I know some of you heard of, you know, on Locked On Knicks. Some of you heard of it from PNT, Knicks Film School, you know, the Nick Time Show, Hard Knicks Life, NYK Terry and Trey helped us with it, Knicks Fan TV. So, you know, it went really, really well. We were super happy with the results again. We had it at Penn 6, which honestly was a great venue. We had a whole little upstairs section to ourselves. There was little TVs behind the bar up there. There was, you know, we had clear view of their huge TV downstairs, and another like big projector on the one wall. So plenty of great places to see the game. And honestly, it was such a great night, and it's always nice to, you know, be out there with fellow Knicks fans, you know, hooting and hollering. Didn't have to pay whatever it cost to get into the building. I don't know how much it cost to get into MSG the other day for that game, but I can only imagine it's probably quite a bit. So, you know, it was just good to have somewhere to be with people celebrating the game. I got to catch up with, you know, all my blog friends and, you know, also other, you know, the other podcast hosts and also a bunch of you guys. I mean, I've met a number of people that listen to Locked On Knicks now, a number of people that read Posting and Toasting, amongst other things. And, you know, I've made some pretty cool friends through these meetups. So this certainly won't be the last one this year. So if you haven't been to one yet, I would definitely suggest going to one of our meetups in the future. The other good part of it, and this is like special shout out to Jonathan Macri at Knicks Film School. Well, first off, he booked the venue, so that was awesome. So shouts to John for that. But then John Macri and Jeffrey Ballone, JB, who, you know, used to run Knicks Film School, now is in like semi-retirement, but still does his thing. I don't know. I think he's coming back, but JB's probably going to listen to this and be like, shut up, man, I'm not coming back. But he's tweeting and stuff again, so he's a little active again. But those two have always made this about charity too. And we worked with Feeding NYC this time. And just from the raffle that we ran for a pair of Knicks tickets, and I think it was a GoPro, they raised enough money to feed 10 New York City families for Thanksgiving this year. And that was before you even took into account the amount of money that the bar was giving to us, because the bar gave a portion of proceeds to charity as well. I don't know exactly what the percentage was, but I mean, the beer and wine and everything else was certainly flowing all night. So I think it's safe to say that probably at least another five families got fed just off the bar tab alone. So fantastic in that regard, and super, super happy with how that all turned out. I'll also just real quick give some personal news. I'm not going to toot my own horn too much because I hate doing that, but it is kind of significant to the show. It's not going to affect my ability to record Locked On Knicks at all, but if you guys follow me on Twitter, I mentioned this the other day. Starting this Monday, I'm actually going to be writing for Sports Illustrated on a freelance basis and going to be in the building at Knicks games. So I'm super, super excited for that. That's going to be starting on Monday. If anything, it'll probably enhance the Locked On Knicks product. So that's a good thing, you know, for me and for you guys. So very excited to get started with that. And that's starting this coming Monday. So, you know, I'll keep you guys all up to date on that. But yeah, very excited for that. But anyway, let's get into the game itself. So the Knicks pretty much came out and like punched the Mavs in the face again in this one. I don't know. They play with just a different energy against the Mavs. And, you know, I thought the Knicks got kind of a cruddy whistle even and still managed to pull this one out. People are going to be like, oh, he only played 18 minutes. Oh, he got in foul trouble, this, that, the other. But I think you got to talk about Frank first. If you're talking about guys that got a crappy whistle, I think Frank is the top one among them. He had a really beautiful, clean block on Porzingis early in the game and got called for a foul on it. And Frank got extremely demonstrative after that one, like almost to the point where I was worried that he was going to get a technical. And that should tell you everything you know. You need to know about just like how ridiculous the foul call was, because Frank never gets demonstrative like that. So, it was a good game for Frank. I mean, he blocked KP. That was good. He shut down Doncic down the stretch. He had probably one of the plays of the game was Doncic was trying to basically like isolate on him, and he poked the ball away and forced a jump ball, which, you know, was a big play down the stretch because Luka had been playing really well in the second half, particularly the third quarter. I mean, he just, like, couldn't miss. And he, you know, Doncic, like, more or less brought the Mavs back, like, by himself at one point. Go figure. But even with the whistle the way it was and only playing 18 minutes, when he was in there, he was pretty much guarding Doncic. And when Doncic was guarded by Frank, per NBA tracking data, he shot 1 of 1, but only scored 3 points and had 2 turnovers. And that was on a night where Doncic put up a 33-point triple-double. So I think you could say it was a really good performance from Frank again. You know, again, he didn't blow you away on the box score. He had 5 points, 3 rebounds. 5 points, 3 assists, 1 rebound, 1 steal. But he also, you know, he stepped up in a huge moment. He had 2 points down the stretch on like game clinching free throws in a foul situation by the Mavericks. And it's kind of wild to look at 2 free throws. Like, it's a huge accomplishment, but on this team it is this year to hit 2 free throws in a row, because I think everybody's been affected by this like free throw plague that's run through the team. And, you know, Frank has been no exception. So, you know, I was glad to see that he was at least able to make his. Should note the team as a whole, this is kind of surprising, kind of unsurprising given their shot selection, but they only shot 7 free throws for the night and shot 6 of 7. So, I mean, I guess that's as much of a positive point as you could take away from almost any game this year, too. Because if they could start hitting anywhere even close to 80% even of their free throws, things probably could have gone different in a couple games already this year, because they would have been a lot closer down the stretch, maybe wouldn't have gotten demoralized to the level that they have, and, you know, would have had a better go of it. But Frank, I mean, had a fantastic game. But that's not to say that Dennis Smith Jr. deserves any less praise, because I thought that he did great. I don't know if he's back for sure. I really hope he's back, because I loved what I saw out of him. He broke down the defense really well all night. He was probing and, you know, looking for passes. He and Mitch had just phenomenal chemistry. It was like off the charts good. you know, it really, the energy from Dennis and Mitch defined a lot of the first half that the Knicks were able to come away with. And, you know, the Knicks, like, won the first half by 5 points. And, you know, it was narrow margins all around. Obviously, they only won by 3 points on that Marcus Morris game winner. So the little things really counted. And, like, I thought, like, DSJ did the little things for once. And, you know, he came out a minus one on the plus minus, but I mean, that's whatever. Like, his play was inspired. It was really, really good. I think that, like, he came away, so his final stat line was 13 points, 8 assists, 6 rebounds. Only turned the ball over twice, which was great. And, like, he shot 2 of 4 from 3. I don't think his shot looks like it's smooth yet. I don't think it's perfect, but very few people you look at and say, like, this guy has a perfect jump shot. All that matters is that they go in, and his shot was going in, and he was shooting it with confidence, which is good. I do wish a little bit, like, one thing that concerned me with him was that he shot 5 of 12 on the night, and out of all 12 of those attempts, he didn't attempt a single layup. And part of that might have just been, like Porzingis, you know, much as we all dislike him, or most of us dislike him at this point, he's obviously good at defending the rim. So, you know, I think Dennis was just kind of avoiding the rim a little bit. They also have Boban in there, who's just, like, a mountain of a man. So I think DSJ was just trying to avoid, you know, those guys and the general rim protectors of Dallas. But he settled, I thought, for a lot of, like little turnaround fadeaway jumpers and that sort of thing, when he could have probably gone to a floater or something, even if he wanted to, like, avoid the rim protection and all that. But it's small nitpicks. Like, I hope that'll come in time. I think that he was just finding his groove again, and it certainly seemed like he found his groove, which is, you know, all you can really ask for. Also, the 8 assists, I mean, they were all impressive. I don't think there was a single, there was maybe one of those. I went back and watched all of his assists over again. There was one assist where I was like, that's technically an assist, but it wasn't. It was like a Bobby Portis, like, back down, like a quick little back down and then, you know, turnaround jumper that he made. I'm like, you know, those are technically assists, but they never really seem like, I don't think Dennis really did that much to set that up. But most of the other ones were legit. I mean, he was getting into, you know, getting in deep. And then, I mean, some of those times, like I said, where he could have potentially gone for a layup and maybe drawn a foul or something, he dumped it off to Mitch for the easy two, and that was smart. I mean, he did that, I don't know, probably 4 or 5 times just in the first half alone. And then, you know, he had some other assists too, where he would find guys on the perimeter that were really good looks, you know, guys coming off screens, stuff like that. Caught Dotson for a really nice 3 at one point like that. Hit Morris for, I think, 2 threes out of his total, so It was honestly awesome. I was really happy for Dennis. He seemed really, really happy after the game, and, you know, gave some good quotes just about how, like, he was happy that, you know, things finally got going for him, and, you know, so happy and proud and whatever to be part of this team and with his teammates and all that stuff. And it was heartwarming stuff. I like Dennis Smith a lot, and I really want him to do well, and I want him to, you know, figure this whole thing out. And I hope, you know, whatever personal stuff is behind him now. And it looks like he looks really spry. He was all over the court physically. So I don't think whatever his back issue was from the preseason is bothering him now. So hopefully now we're to the point where we can just start seeing Dennis be Dennis again. He had one put back dunk in this one and almost had a second one, which is kind of absurd. And I mean, his ups looked every bit as good as they've ever been. So I think we're about to start seeing Smith returning back to what we thought he could be. I don't know if he's necessarily going to be this breakout star that some of us thought he was going to be, if that jumper can't be consistent. But I think at the very least, he's going to establish himself and be getting minutes and productive minutes soon, like hopefully sooner than later. So that's kind of my takeaway from this one. But all in all, amazing game for Dennis. Like, I will say, at the meetup, and I mean, there's a chance this was just me because I love Dennis so much, but I mean, right from the start, I was going crazy when he was making shots. People kind of groaned a little bit, like the first three that he took. They're like, oh, no. And then it went in, and everybody was like, whoa, okay, okay. And pretty soon, by the time he hit the second half, I mean, because Frank was out with foul trouble for a lot of it, Dennis was like the star attraction, I think, for most of the game. And people were hooting and hollering for him. I think that he might have gotten the biggest reaction of anybody at the meetup. And it was, other than the game winner, obviously. I mean, you can't really compete with that. But I'm talking like game-wide, I think Dennis was the most popular player for pretty much the whole game. So it was cool for that too. Dennis, if you're listening, you definitely have Knicks fans behind you, you know, and that want to see you do well. So then, like, speaking of Dennis too, I mentioned it when I was talking about Dennis. Mitchell Robinson had, I thought, a great game as well. He came off the bench. I was just glad to see that he got to play. I was so worried that we weren't going to get to see Mitch play Porzingis. And they didn't really, I feel like there wasn't too much like one-on-one between the two of them. There was one where Mitch like got a rebound or like attempted to get a rebound. And I don't think he ultimately got it. It like kind of flew out from between the two of them. But there was one point where Mitch like went for a rebound against Porzingis and like completely out-muscled him. And that was pretty satisfying. Other than that, there wasn't too many other like 1v1s between the two of them that were really that crazy. But Mitch had an enormous first half. He had 14 points, 7 rebounds, and a block in the first half. Ended the whole game with 16 points, 8 rebounds, and a block. And, you know, that was in large part due to foul trouble. He only played 22 minutes, but shot 7 of 8 from the field. I mean, gave you everything that you want out of Mitch in whatever minutes you can get from him. But I just wish that he was able to stay on a little better in this game. But, I mean, it's fine. He had 3 fouls in the first half. Picked up, I think it was a quick 2 in the third, and then came back in the fourth. And managed to play a couple minutes and then got his final foul and fouled out. So, like, I don't know, that's kind of the issue with him is the foul trouble still. And hopefully we'll start seeing him clean that up a little more again soon. That this is like the only reason. So I think it's totally laughable that the Nets signed DeAndre Jordan to the amount of money and years that they did with how he looks so far this year. Because I don't think DeAndre Jordan really has $40 million worth of play left in him anymore. But the one thing that I will say about DeAndre Jordan was that last year he seemed to have a really good impact on Mitch as far as helping him play like smarter basketball once he got here. And I feel like Mitch needs like still now, like until he fully establishes himself into like a wily vet himself, I think he needs like a veteran presence to kind of reel him in and give him real-time feedback and stuff like when the coaches can't necessarily do it. And I don't know if this team has that. Maybe Taj Gibson will kind of step into that role. But as of right now, I haven't seen anybody that really seems to vibe with Mitch in the way that DeAndre did. So I'm hoping someone kind of steps into that role and can like give Mitch some live pointers and feedback on his performance. Because, he's definitely still fouling a little too much. And you know, you don't want to see him do that because his impact is so great if he can stay on the floor that you don't want him fouling as much as he does. So we'll see how it all goes. But the other thing I want to say is, like, I forget who I heard tweet or say it, I mean, ages ago. But I think that Mitch has, like, a little bit of Dennis Rodman in him as far as rebounding goes. Like, the one thing that I've noticed with Mitch, I mean, he had 8 rebounds in this one. And, like, most of his rebounds, he's not out-muscling the other guy. He's, like, it just seems like he's always in the right place. You know, he just has really great like instincts for where the ball's going to come off, where to get to, and, you know, just make the right play on the ball, you know, whether it's an offensive rebound or defensive rebound. So I don't know. He's got a little bit of that worminess in him. I think he's developing really well as a rebounder. And as his strength gets higher, you know, then he's going to be able to just out rebound you no matter what. You know, craftily or just by force. And that'll be good to see too. So really enjoying, I enjoyed his first game back for sure. And I hope what we saw out of him in this one, there's definitely more to come. Marcus Morris, I still haven't really talked about yet. I watched the game again and like, obviously he took a decent amount of shots and stuff. And all that. He played the same role he's been playing, but I feel like he was relatively quiet for the game until that game winner, obviously, and that was that was very loud, of course. The game winner was awesome. It was very cold-blooded. It was almost cringeworthy because he basically just did his like Melo impression, more or less, which, by the way, shout out to Melo, to any Melo fans. Apparently the Garden went insane for the Melo news and wouldn't stop. Like, people were starting like chants and cheering and stuff for almost the whole quarter that the Melo news got announced that he signed with Portland. So I'm excited to see that too. I always like Melo. I know he's very polarizing, but I like Melo. I don't know. I like that he got signed. I'm excited to see him play again. And hopefully he actually puts himself like in the team concept, I guess, and doesn't prioritize himself on a team like Portland that clearly is just looking for some extra scoring along with Lillard and McCollum. You know, hopefully he fits that role well, but it's neither here nor there. Anyway, Marcus Morris, yeah, on the game winner, kind of did his Melo impression, dribbled it out a little bit, and then wound up taking a three, and it went in. And when it went in, everybody freaked out. And then I remember the clock was, you know, the clock was at zeros, and then they reset it for however much it was. And then, you know, they ended up not scoring, obviously, and the Knicks won the game. So it was funny, actually. We all were like freaking out, and it was like, it's zeros. And like, you know, the bar was going crazy. And then all of a sudden everybody starts like quieting down. I'm like, what are they doing? And they're like, I'm putting a couple more seconds on. So we had to like chill for a minute. But then you got to celebrate all over again once the clock went to zeros finally. So it was cool. It was a great moment. And you know, it's funny, last year we did our first meetup, like the first like big team up meetup that we've done yet, also for a Dallas game, and the Knicks won that game as well, and it was totally unexpected. And I think that was one of Mitch's first games that he kind of broke out, amongst other things. So it was it's cool. Knicks meetups remain undefeated against Dallas, I guess. But Morris's shot was awesome. I mean, he played a good game overall. He was team high plus 11, and he definitely was a positive the whole time he was out there. I was thinking about this, and I was like, I feel like I would want RJ later in the season, and I'll get to RJ in a sec. He didn't have a great game again, but I'm not gonna harp on that. But like, I would have wanted someone younger, you know, taking the final shot if it was pretty much any other game. But because of what game it was and how significant this was to the fans and everything and how the energy was in the building, I was pretty glad to see Morris take it, because he's clearly at this stage the guy best equipped to take and make that shot. And he did. And, you know, so he did exactly what he was supposed to. I do think it's kind of interesting, and it kind of sucks if we're being honest, that Morris, I think, is the one veteran free agent that you can say, like, for certain has come in and been exactly what the front office envisioned him being at the beginning of the season. And I guess you could say the same for Elfrid as well. We'll see when he gets back what kind of role he's going to step into now that Frank has kind of asserted himself. And if Dennis's burst in this game was real, then, you know, presumably Peyton might be third on the point guard depth chart going forward. But like, Morris has been basically exactly what you thought he would be. He's been, other than being a bonehead sometimes, like I take great exception to the fact that he's like inviting technical fouls as much as he does, because it's just, I think he's trying to make a point and like be tough or whatever, but it just comes across as dumb to me, not tough. So, you know, I don't know. That's just my impression of it, I guess. But I feel like he is providing leadership. You know, he had really kind words for Frank after the one game when they did the interview together. I think that was after the first Dallas game, actually. And, you know, he seems like a guy that everybody respects and gets along with. And, I mean, I think everybody gets along together on the team. Obviously, it doesn't seem like there's any, like, inter-team rivalries that we know of yet. No, like, Trier and Hardaway, you know, butting heads yet. But Morris just seems very affable and very, you know, very respected by his teammates. And I think it's a good thing that he's doing what he's doing, because the only thing that sucks is, like, he's on a one-year deal and everybody else is on one-plus-one-year deals, or in the case of Randall, is on a two-plus-one. It would have been nice if they could have worked that plus one in with Morris as well. I just don't think they could have. But, it's going to be bittersweet, like, if they trade Morris, because he's the one veteran free agent that I really think has done exactly what was promised with him, which is just being there to kind of soak up the usage and stuff. But he's doing it efficiently. He's doing it, unlike Randall, he's scoring very efficiently right now, which makes it more worth it and makes it so you could put up with some of the kind of Melo-esque parts of his game. I don't know. I like him, and I would prefer to like keep him around, but if they can trade him and get, say, a first round pick or something by the deadline, then you absolutely have to do it, because he's the only guy that I think is really going to be worth something like that on this team this year that you wouldn't want to keep. Like, obviously you could get a first rounder for RJ or, you know, whatever, like Knox or probably Frank at this point, but you know, you don't want to trade any of those guys. Morris is the one guy that could probably legitimately fetch you value. But you know, it isn't someone that you necessarily will have here long-term. So it's going to be bittersweet if he eventually goes, but I kind of, if they keep him, I really wouldn't be upset at this point. I feel like I should mention Porzingis real quick, just to point out that he was booed like crazy. I think he was actually shook. He said that he wasn't after the game and stuff. He's like, oh, it's whatever. They booed. It's fine. This, that, the other. Said, like, I'm not here to win fans over, some other, you know, crap like that. But like he was, I thought he was definitely shook. The boos were like, it was like playoff level. Like I haven't heard the Garden on a TV broadcast sound like that in a while. And I mean, the Garden normally for any given game can get up and, you know, get really freaking loud. Like even on like a random Tuesday night against, you know, whoever, I was going to say the Cavaliers, but that didn't go so well last week. but let's say like whatever, some random ass team. The Knicks could be playing any given night, and if it's a close game and the Knicks are playing well, the Garden is going to be going crazy. But the Garden was going mega crazy, and that was part of why I wanted to rewatch some of it, some of the game, because you couldn't really appreciate that in the bar. Like you're talking to people, and there's all kinds of other noise going on all around. So it was hard to really hear just how loud the Garden was, but it was insane. I actually talked to Terry Ross, who's been on the show, from NYK Terry and Trey, and he said it was probably about as loud as he's ever heard the Garden since they've been like season ticket holders, which is insane. Also of note with Porzingis, because I'm not going to highlight anything positive, obviously, he passed on a potential key three down the stretch and passed to Doncic instead. And Doncic ended up missing it, and Porzingis could have stepped into the moment there and taken a three-pointer to potentially put the Mavs up, and then instead, back down the other end, Randall got a possession on him, backed him down, and KP flopped, and it was very satisfying because Randall basically just like backed his butt into him just a little bit, and KP like went over like a, you know, like a tree, and Randall just walked in for an easy layup, and it was pretty brilliant. Very satisfying to see Porzingis get overpowered, because those are the sort of things. It's funny. Like when Porzingis was on the team, I would have been the first guy to make excuses for him and be like, oh, it'll come in time, blah, blah, blah. But now we get to make fun of all these things that we were constantly like having to deflect on. Like he doesn't have any lower body strength, and you know, sure, his biceps and whatever look great now, from all those curls with his juice head trainer, or I assume juice head trainer, but like he still clearly has no lower body strength, and it, you know, it's showed in both games now. The first game he lost a key rebound because he couldn't box Randall out properly, and this game he gave up a go-ahead bucket to Randall down the stretch just by not being able to hold his ground properly in the post, and you know, against someone in Randall who wasn't having a particularly great game again either. So It was satisfying. I took some great satisfaction in Porzingis' return to the Garden. And he doesn't get another chance to do it this year, because we got both those games out of the way within a week of each other. So that's it, man. Dallas is done this year. Knicks beat them 2-0, which is just absurd given the fact that Knicks have three wins at this point in the season, and two of them are against Dallas. I will talk quickly about Randle, too. I thought his shot selection was still pretty suspect. I do at least think that he was giving pretty good effort through most of the game, which was good to see, like, especially right from the start. I mean, he should be giving effort all the time. Like, that's the thing. I shouldn't have to be like, oh, it was a good effort from Randle. Like, Randle should just be consistently giving good effort. That's what his job is. He's the highest paid player on the team. He was brought in to be kind of like a star. But his, I still, you know, I don't like his shot selection. I still think he's trying to do too much with it. He can't shoot from three right now either. I mean, I don't know what happened. Like, maybe he hasn't been wide open enough to really start hitting him in rhythm. But, man, it's just ugly. I mean, in this game, what did he shoot? He shot 1 of 5 from three in this game. He hit one in the first quarter, and that was – or maybe it was the second quarter. I don't know. Very early in the game, he hit one, and that was it. Then he just missed all the rest. And they were not – I mean – some of them were pretty open. I mean, it's shots that if he was shooting the percentage that he did last year, of like, you know, like in the 30s, the mid 30% range, I mean, he'd be looking good right now, but he can't hit threes for the life of him right now. And, you know, he ended with a final stat line of 17 points, 8 of 18 shooting, 10 rebounds, but again, had 6 turnovers. And so, like, he's now averaging 4.1 turnovers per game. That's over a turnover higher than his career high last year. And he's shooting 48.7% true shooting. So true shooting percentage, for those of you not, you know, acquainted with it, is basically a field goal percentage that takes into account that three-pointers are more valuable and also factors in free throw percentage. So he's shooting 487 true shooting, and that's bad. That's really bad, especially considering last year he shot 60% true shooting, which is good. That's a great number. You know, an average player is somewhere, you know, in the low 50s probably. So he's shooting below average, and he's turning over a ton and generally playing a role that I don't think suits him at all. And so I think something's got to give. I mean, I watched his field goal attempts in this one, and unless I just glossed over one by mistake, I don't think he took a single shot out of pick and roll in this game again. And they got to start running him out of pick and roll. I mean, the biggest thing is he functions so well against mismatches. So if you can get him in a quick pick and roll and get him switched onto a point guard, you know, he could do his ISO thing there, and it would go okay, because, you know, he's good at taking advantage of size mismatches. But when he's, you know, driving into the power forward and center on the floor at any given time, he's undersized, and he can, you know, barrel those guys out of the way to some degree, but, you know, nobody's going to do well against double teams at the rim against the other team's two biggest players. So, and it seems like teams have him figured out and know that that's basically what he's going to do. So, and there was a couple of those in this game as well, where he kind of got the ball knocked away from him in the post, or just took really bad takes because there was too much traffic there. So I hope that, I don't know, I hope we start seeing that getting smoothed out soon. I know that David Fizdale probably kept the clock running, you know, kept the clock from hitting midnight in this game, because I think if they had gotten blown out in this one, he might not have lasted. But, you know, going forward, he really has to figure to use Fizz's own words against him, he has to get Randle right sooner than later, because Randall's definitely not right now. I'll briefly touch on RJ. He did have another off game. My only real regret from these Dallas games is he didn't really show up KP in either one, and that would have been nice. But, you know, he's still a rookie. You know, we can only expect so much out of him. I think the two Dallas games are the only two games so far this year that I've seen from RJ that seemed like the moment got to him a little bit. Because I think he knew just how significant it was to be going up against Porzingis, who was like the previous savior, and he's now the current savior of the team. And, it was all right, though. I legitimately, in the first few minutes, I just remember being like, RJ looks shook right now. And that's not usually how I feel about RJ ever. He always seems, even in the games he doesn't play quite as well or doesn't shoot quite as well, he always seems in control of himself in the moment and everything. In this one, he seemed a little bit off. And I think some of the pressure got to him a little bit, but I don't really care. It's fine. Like, he's a rookie. It doesn't matter, you know, what one or two, you know, regular season games look like for him in his rookie season. You know, he's going to have some moments like that. So, you know, I'll just look for him. I think he's going to have a great bounce back game probably tonight. And you know, we'll see, but I will just point out, if we want to find one good positive, he did shoot 2 of 2 from the free throw line. So take that, and, you know, we'll make that the positive from RJ for this game. And then lastly, I figured I'd just shout out Damian Dotson. He had real minutes again. He played 23 minutes, and I think it really paid off. He had 7 points, 2 boards, 3 assists, 3 steals in 23 minutes. He was a plus 10 in the box score. That was good enough for second on the team behind Marcus Morris, who had a plus 11. And I thought he had a lot of impact on the court. He did exactly what you expect out of him. He played defense. He made a 3 or 2, and just he was pushing things in transition, which was nice to see. He got some steals, you know, some good ball pressure. I don't know. I like Dotson a lot. I think kind of like how Frank has asserted himself for major minutes for the whole rest of the year, I think Dotson has shown in his last few appearances that he should probably have Ellington's minutes off the bench now. I think he's really earned it. So that's my takeaway on Dotson. That's my last takeaway for this game. I think it was great. Awesome game. Sorry I got the pod out a little late. I needed to compose myself, and I was honestly pretty tired all day Friday from just being out so late the night before, because I live in Jersey, so it took me a while to get home and whatever after the meetup, and I just wanted to watch the game again too and really fully appreciate it. So because I managed to watch most of it at the bar, but you know, you want to take a little more analytical look at it. But yeah, that's it, man. Thank you guys again so much to anyone that came out to the meetup. Any of you that didn't come out, feel free to come to the next one. Like, really, really, it's so much fun. We had such a great time. I would recommend anybody that hasn't come before to come sometime in the future, because it's really a blast. And I think if you haven't come before, you'd definitely enjoy it if you come to one in the future. But that's all for today. So we'll be back. I'm not positive. I forget if Gavin's going to be around tonight to record after the game, but I will have something for you guys for probably Monday, if nothing else, if Gavin's not around. And then Monday night, I'm going to be covering the game, so that should be pretty cool. So I'll keep you all updated on that as well. But until then, peace out. Talk to you later.